Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi there, and welcome to the first Explaining History podcast of the new year. It's 2014. We've got loads going on this year, of which we'll find out about a bit later on. Just a few little announcements. Firstly, the first additional writer on the Explaining History team, Julia Routledge, has produced for us a brilliant biography of George Orwell in our new Explaining History 20th Century Lives series. Well worth a read. Superb analysis of everything from Orwell's days in Burma through to his time as a down and out in Paris and his relationship with fascism, communism, and his observations of on the left. It's a great read and one I entirely recommend. In addition to that, the latest Explaining History title to come out that we've got out this week is Redson at War Part 3, and it's the battle to stop the Japanese from moving further south towards Australia. It focuses on the Battle of the Coral Sea, the Australian campaign in Papua, and the Battle of Midway, and the American campaign in Guadalcanal. And the point of the story really is this struggle, firstly to stop the Japanese from advancing further south, and to secure Australia as the launching post for MacArthur's armies to take back the Philippines. And kind of question really why it was that Japan's advance after devastating British, Dutch and American possessions in Southeast Asia ran out of steam literally within months. So check that out. Again, well worth a read, and some very interesting points explored. So I would say that because I wrote it. Anyway, on to my topic for today. I want to talk a bit about Leon Trotsky and his final days in Mexico. Now, the reason I think this is worth talking about is because it's very often an overlooked kind of postscript. We know that Stalin won the battle for the leadership of the Soviet Union, that Trotsky is exiled in 1929 and finally expelled from the country in 1929. And then after that, most kind of A-level syllabuses go a bit hazy on what happened to him. He bums around Europe for a bit. He winds up in France and Norway and not particularly popular in either of those countries, and he winds up in Mexico for 3.5 years, and then suddenly he's been murdered. And the nature of his exile in Mexico, his relationships with his supporters, who were mainly in America at the time, and the recruitment of Ramón Mercado, and the man who finally assassinates Trotsky, are all really pivotal issues that need to be explored in order to give these last 3 years of his life a kind of a bigger context and more meaning. And also, Trotsky is, a marginalised figure, but on the left, on the kind of the factional Trotskyite left, he's obviously still very important. And he's still clearly very important to Stalin, who goes to the time and trouble of having two attempts on his life, one of which is successful. Trotsky's caustic wit and his mouth, if you will, always got the better of him. And the various debates as to the future of the Soviet Union after the death of Lenin pitted the two men against one another. And Stalin would never forgive Trotsky anyway for having in the early 1920s referred to him as the grave digger of the revolution. Stalin's revolutionary credibility, his accepted status or his desired status as the heir to Lenin was really one of the main things that he had and clung on to. And for Lenin to challenge that in front of the rest of the Politburo was really a very egregious crime, one that Stalin would certainly never forgive. Trotsky and Stalin had never got on ever since the war against the Poles in 1920, where outside the gates of Warsaw the Red Army is given a sound battering and sent back to Russia with its tail between its legs. Trotsky and Stalin are political commissars on that campaign against the Poles, both of whom blame the other for the failure in Poland. Stalin had conspired with Kamenev and Zinoviev and the rest of the Politburo to have Trotsky progressively marginalised and then excluded from the Politburo, and then excluded from public life and really from and then sent into internal exile in Kazakhstan following his slight against Stalin. Though even if he had maintained impeccable manners, the chances are that Stalin would always have looked upon Trotsky as a threat and would always have sought to remove him. Trotsky was, at a certain period of time following Lenin's death, viewed as, after Lenin's death, I beg your pardon, during Lenin's dying years from about 1922 onwards, viewed as a clear candidate for the successor to the revolution. The problems he had was that he was really the Johnny-come-lately of the Bolshevik Party. He'd only joined the Bolshevik Party in late 1917 when he could see the October Revolution was inevitable. He had been a strident critic of Lenin throughout the 1910s, and Stalin had kept most of the cuttings from Trotsky's periodicals and articles which decried Leninism and its break with the Mensheviks. So Trotsky never really stood much of a chance. Latent anti-Semitism in the Soviet Union would have also put paid to his ambitions, and Trotsky was acutely aware of this. And to an extent, Trotsky's heart was more in the desire to continue being a revolutionary. Becoming an administrator or a statesman was less his style, and more exporting revolution as far as possible. And in the mid-1920s, when it was really the weight of the argument as to what to do with the future of the Soviet Union, should it be a constant exporter of revolution, as in Trotsky's permanent revolution idea, or will it be a kind of a basis of socialism in one country, i.e. the five-year plans, when the argument shifts towards Stalin, Trotsky is completely marginalised. Trotsky is a rather awkward house guest when he's finally exiled from the country in Turkey. The Turkish authorities aren't particularly happy with him being there, and the expense that has to go into his police guard, which is infiltrated by the NKVD, the GPU, I beg your pardon, at the time, is considered by the Turkish government to be distinctly disadvantageous. He's shunted on to various countries. He spent some time in France. He spent some time in Norway. The Norwegians don't want him there. The Norwegians are very mindful that they have a very powerful neighbour growing towards their east, one that's interfered in Finland's affairs before and would probably be best to keep on the right side of. So finally, the home is found for him, of all places, in Mexico. And it's found really there by Diego Rivera, the great muralist, artist at the time, and his wife Frida Kahlo, both of whom were Trotskyites, and both of whom petitioned President Cardenas to allow him to stay in the country. Diego Rivera was this wild and predictable character, very often armed to the teeth, a kind of a gun-toting artist stroke bandit. who was more interested in the rather romantic and rebellious aspects of Trotsky's ideas than the taut political and economic analyses that Trotsky put towards modern capitalism and critiques thereof. Mexico obviously had its own history of dramatic rebellions and insurrections and revolt, stemming back to kind of the Zapata Revolution and Pancho Villa during the First World War. So it was a volatile, chaotic society where deep divisions between right and left existed. The enemies of Trotsky that he would find wouldn't be so much on the right, but would come from the Mexican Communist Party, who were, of course, Stalinists. When Trotsky wound up in Mexico, he was worried that he would be assassinated when he got off the boat. And Trotsky was very mindful of the fact that Stalin's tentacles reached very far indeed. And through institutions like Comintern, Stalin could reach out to communist parties around the world, literally wherever Trotsky was going. Trotsky himself was not without friends, however. The mainstay of Trotskyites outside Russia was, ironically, in America itself during the 1920s and 30s. There were a number of prominent Trotskyite intellectuals, some of whom finally abandoned Trotskyism later on, and many of whom eventually shift so far to the right that they become, in their dotage, Reaganites. I'm speaking particularly of William Crystal in this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In this regard. Two leading Trotskyites, James Burnham and Max Eastman, eventually renounced their master, the old man, as he was known, at his compound in Coyoacan, and engaged themselves in fierce anti-Trotskyite debates. The Socialist Workers' Party in New York was the main source of support for Trotsky while he was in exile. Trotsky began living at Diego Rivera's Blue House, and his stay there is abruptly interrupted when, for two reasons. Firstly, he has an affair with Frida Kahlo, which was perhaps ill-advised, though, in fairness, Diego Rivera had many dalliances of his own. But also, more deeply for Rivera, and it's not entirely sure he found out about Trotsky's antics, but he certainly was hurt by Trotsky when the old man dismissed his own revolutionary writings. Trotsky is first and foremost a writer and a journalist, and incredibly critical of other people's pronouncements and works, and he openly sneered at what Rivera had to say, which was probably quite incoherent and poorly drafted. But it was that snub that really sent a kind of Rivera to the point of a blood feud with Trotsky. He had been subsidizing. He was an extremely wealthy artist. He was the great artistic national treasure of Mexico at that time, and had been successful in managing to draw up, managing to get contracts with people as far as the Rockefellers and the Astors in New York. Anyway. Rivera was not short of money, and Trotsky was, and Trotsky was reliant and dependent on Rivera's largesse, but not so much that he was willing to sacrifice his own revolutionary and intellectual integrity by claiming that Rivera's work was any good when he clearly thought it wasn't. So Trotsky became a man of much reduced circumstances in the last 2 years of his life in Mexico, and was dependent on selling some of his papers to Harvard University, and he was also dependent. He was dependent on selling his various reminiscences of the Russian Revolution. And he was commissioned by an American editor. American publishers to write a biography of Stalin, which dragged on and on and on, and was a real millstone around Trotsky's neck. But he rather appreciated the advance, because he was not only supporting him and his wife Natalia, but he was supporting their grandson, Seva, as all of Trotsky's children had been killed either in Russia by the Stalinist regime. His son Lev had been probably assassinated in Paris. He died in very mysterious circumstances, and his other daughter Zina had killed herself in Berlin. So very, very tragic family history of the wider Trotsky family, leaving Trotsky to support his grandson, and also to support a kind of a household of bodyguards and well-wishers and supporters and followers. So by the first attempt on Trotsky's life, which came in the guise of a full frontal assault by Mexican communists in 1940, and this was led by another painter, Siqueiros, who was a paid-up member of the Mexican Communist Party, which is the way in which Rivera eventually drifts as well. This assassination attempt fails, but it claims the life of one of Trotsky's American bodyguards, who had actually been working as a double agent for the Stalinists, and was subsequently murdered to cover their tracks. The result of this is that Trotsky barricades himself into a compound. The house he's living in is turned into a virtual fortress. And so, obviously, the strategy to get Trotsky isn't to attack from the outside, but to get somebody to infiltrate and to get a man on the inside. And that man is Ramón Mercader, who was a veteran of the Spanish Civil War, which had turned out to be an excellent recruiting ground for Russian and Soviet-backed killers and assassins. And there had been a general anxiety by Trotsky that once the Spanish Civil War had concluded itself in 1939... that a wave of refugees would sail westwards, and indeed this did happen, fleeing the Franco regime, and amongst them would be men who were actually GPU assassins, one of whom was Ramón Mercader, who travelled with his mother, who was also a GPU killer, and had been conducting an affair with her Soviet handler, so to speak. The irony is that to the end of his days, Trotsky believed that the USSR was still a force for revolutionary good in the world. He believed that it had been hijacked by Stalin, not just by Stalin himself, but by a bureaucratic class, and that the workers' revolution needed to kind of reinvent itself. There needed to be a further workers' revolution in order to get rid of this new administrative class who were really the explanation for why Stalinism was as it was. The idea that Stalinism was perhaps an offshoot of Leninism, was the natural byproduct of Leninism, and really of Leninist Trotskyism, was something that Trotsky himself wasn't willing to entertain. Although Trotsky had been responsible for many a firing squad when he was the People's Commissar for War, the idea that he wanted to distance himself from really was that Stalinism was in some way a product of the regime that he helped to create. And therefore, he believed that the USSR itself was an entirely legitimate entity. And this belief really splits the Socialist Worker Party, the Trotskyite Socialist Worker Party in New York, into those who, after 1939 and the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, believe that the Soviet Union is an utterly corrupt counterpart, really, to Nazism. And those who keep the faith with Trotsky that it is basically an inherently benign entity, simply hijacked by Stalinists. And the schism in the party really causes Trotsky to become more isolated and more vulnerable. The actual details of his murder are, as in August 1940, Ramon Mercader had done a very good job of infiltrating the compound in Koyakan and presenting himself as a sympathetic Trotskyite, and had made a relationship with the old man based on presenting himself almost as a student of his works, and hoping that the old man would look at some of Mercader's anti-Stalinist writing and critique it. And Trotsky, again, is hugely dismissive of what he sees, but it gives Ramon Mercader the opportunity to be alone with Trotsky in his study, and this is when the ice pick moment occurs. Trotsky dies in hospital the following day. He regains consciousness for a while. But in a way, his significance, his importance, his relevance had already declined to such a point at this time that really one wonders why Stalin actually went to the lengths he did to kill off Trotsky. It could possibly be that Stalin was enjoying the vendetta of it all, but I suspect it's not about that. Stalin really, in some instances, is a vengeful individual, but Stalin is very often motivated more by his own paranoia and his own suspicion and his own fear that Trotsky might represent and resemble and be able to articulate something that he finds threatening. Quite what that is unclear, I feel. Trotsky could not realistically be seen as any kind of credible threat to Stalin's position as the leader of the communist world. So that one's up for discussion. I'll be interested to hear your opinions and thoughts, and I may record something on this later on. Anyway, I hope that is useful. Let me know what you think. And obviously, if you visit www.explaininghistory.com, you can leave your thoughts and opinions there. We've got our newsletter, which is, once again, a fantastic resource full of handy tidbits and points of view. So if you can sign up for that, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. And check out Julia Routledge's biography of Orwell. Contains all manner of interesting observations on Stalinism and more.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.